Blog Talk Radio.
Sometimes life just treats us very, very well in spite of ourselves. Hello, welcome to Masonic Effects. It's time to penetrate the impenetrable. The world around us is, to sum it up in a word right now, I think it's generating some interesting ideas. You can see in the background on here many people that have the privilege, have access, wrinkling their nose and shying away from listening to news reports and because it has so much unpleasantness involved with it, and I look at the amount of it all, the unpleasantness is generally about an immense amount of stupidity, people with reason and ability not using it. That's my definition of stupid. So many people in the world aren't so smug and entitled. They don't have access to so much information. In fact, it's important for them. When you don't have it, it's like anything else, and it becomes more vital in some way. At least it is in most parts of the world. But that seems to fade very quick. That sense of urgency seems to fade when we have an overabundance. We become intellectually obese, I think. We certainly have in our vocabulary the using words that express an idea is not as popular, believe it or not. Something isn't just good, it's awesome. I have no idea what the hell that means, but something isn't positive, it's embellished. Always with the embellishment, as if it brings and extracts a better, more precise sense of validation to the comment, to use exaggerated language. So the program today is awesome. I have no idea what the hell that means, but it's awesome. The curiosity is when we are able to look at all of the material thinking, well, if you don't, you're not comfortable, or if it's too much, just to turn the tap off, walk away. We can still do that. Well, if we get all fretful, we can conjure up the idea that there is no safe place in this entire nasty planet for the likes of us, for gentility. We know better. The state of mind. You create these escapes, these places, these mind palaces as you wish, as you can. Most of the things that we call news aren't, you know, in the strictest sense of the term. Accidents happen. That's not really news. Salaciousness is part of a culture. That's not really news. Bad things happen to good people. That's not really news. And crime, well, that's part of the nature of human beings, that we're not all born with the same regulator. That for some, there seems to be a need to take advantage of the lack of supervision that occurs when you're an adult, where you have to make decisions based on your own beliefs, your own background. So is that news in the bigger picture? I guess it is, but how many times do you need to see it? 1,000? 10,000 times before it sort of sinks in? It's a car accident, and I get no satisfaction seeing somebody injured at the roadside. So can I turn away? Or I don't, it's not ignoring it, it's putting it in its proper place. It is what it is. But to run it all together and to think that the world is a big bad place, it takes another kind of a thought, and it has more to do with the individual than with the outside world. As if we feel hard done by that. Our lives were not perfect in every way. Well, we're only here today. I'm going to be talking to you about the poetry, the courage of poets and philosophers, but two in particular. I'm going to highlight Samuel Coleridge's work. And his friend, if you do a little bit of probing, he is friends with Robert Southey and more famously with William Wordsworth, Lake District poets. And if you look at them carefully, these fellows didn't come from exquisitely pampered backgrounds. In fact, they were emotionally damaged. And it's like saying, well, you know, it's like telling us, is that news? Well, for thousands of years, we've known that, you know, most babies are born drinking ditch water, and they have survived. And most babies are born without medical assistance around. And they survive, not in a perfect world, but they survive. To think that, to decide that something is overwhelming is an internal switch. Keep up. In the meantime, yes, some days are busier than others. And when it's not, and you can sit back and reflect, good on you. Good on you. Acknowledge. You can acknowledge, you can think of it as tedious, or you can think of it as an accomplishment. What determines whether you're experiencing life as anxiety or as excitement is you. What determines the foolishness or awareness isn't in terms of absolutes, it's in terms of observation and understanding. Today we'll look at that in a little more detail and challenge ourselves a bit. But the order, we've decided that we're going to be part of this thing, this phenomena referred to as Freemasonry, and it's an interesting commitment that we make, And then we seem to spend a lot of time, at least where I am, struggling with what it is. Well, I find that kind of interesting. I function within a Masonic framework that really disavows philosophical currency, which is, and to think that this is now referred to geopolitically. It's like, well, over there they invest in philosophy. Over here we invest in, charitable works. If we could ever get away with that kind of thinking, it's like suggesting that this fundamental universality of humanity is not valid because it doesn't fit our narrative. The people over here, what are we, 5,000 kilometers across that pond are different, Well, we are in some ways and we're not in others. There is that we know that around the world and from then till now, we've had people making contributions. I mean, in spite of our stupidity, men and women have been advancing science and the arts in remarkable ways, in ways that benefit all of us. We're claiming that we're able to recognize merit, not because of color, not because of gender, but because of the value that each person brings to the stage that we're on. Good on us. It's, if it is an ideal, then it is one worth aspiring to achieve. Masonry does that in a way. But to think that, we listen here to people feeling quite dissatisfied with the craft, quite dissatisfied, and ready to find fault with it. And the interesting thing is the organization seems to convulse. It seems to have a, maybe not a convulsion, but maybe a cramp. It seems to cramp up when it's because it's so insecure, because it hasn't reasoned through and what's happening around. It seems to accept that premise and ramps up that it has to spit out ideas. It's like a child coming to you and saying, Dad, I'm bored. Well, you see some parents that will jump through hoops to try and satisfy the little knob. But the resolution of boredom is from inside. So if you're a boring little snot, well, you're a boring little snot. If you're bored, then what are you going to do about it? Because at the end of the day, it's your state of mind. And to think that your happiness, this is quite a trap. To think that your happiness is dependent on someone else is reinforcing a flawed picture. Could have been a somebody, but I was not born to the royalty. Everybody has had shortcomings and struggles and an imbalance. Once you realize that, we're still left with the same question. So what? So what? Those are those are the cards you are dealt. What are you going to do with it? You're going to feel sorry for yourself? Are you going to be an insufferable bore? I'm somebody, so, I should, the rain shouldn't fall on me. Tedious, huh? And I suppose there will always be people impressed with that kind of malarkey. But when you start to look at ideas of the nature of mankind, of a human being, we begin to puzzle through what puzzle. We're handed through Masonry, we're handed some very enriched material, particularly philosophical reasoning, that doesn't give us, although some would lead you to believe otherwise, but it doesn't really give us a formula for living. And each situation that we're in requires processing them in a form, except we have some sense of ethics, of character. Perhaps one of the most profound motivators in the development of good character is being able to wonder out loud what it is. The man who can do that is a man of conscience. Now, if you point out that there's always a free radical, there's always these mutations out there, well, again, your point. In spite of that, we make progress. And we identify the variants around us. And we can observe with some curiosity the effect they have, that those variants have. Human condition. Somehow we have this notion that if we are reading and beginning to scratch the surface in privacy, we're scratch the surface of philosophy and understanding the world around us, well, we need some reliable sources for that. Yeah, because we are, in a sense, admitting that we're not the genius that our moms told us we were. We're pretty normal. Freemasonry isn't the trigger for overachievement. You are. Your efforts to live a good life, to be satisfied within your means. Does it mean that Freemasonry has difficulty with oligarchs? Yeah. Yeah. If you don't have a conscience about where these obscene levels of wealth come from or how the system produces it, it is... In many ways, exploiting somebody else, well, I guess you can be content with that illusion. At the end of the day, we tend to come to terms with what we are and who we are. And hopefully, when you begin to ask the question, have I done something meaningful, you'll be able, because the truth comes out always. You know that yourself. You're a scoundrel or you're creating an illusion. You were faking it through life. Like any decent person, you would want to have something substantive to contribute, to be able to say, yes, I did something. It wasn't enough, maybe, but I did something useful. I helped people. I was in some way beneficial. The objectivity, the objectivity of the science and arts. We seem to fall through the bottom of the discussion when we're talking about imagination. But the interesting part is this feeling of the rawness of the information. How does it fit with what we already know? We come from that big tribe that likes to believe what we want to believe. No, we're pretty clear about that. And we'll even get sulky and pouty and angry about it if you push too far. But eventually we come around to it. Eventually, we're not so lost. We find ourselves. We find ourselves in it, and we are often influenced by like-minded people. Fortunately, our community has become global. Well, it's not just becoming, but we're more aware of it because of the technology. I don't get out my harness the horse to the cart and travel for a day to visit my neighbors. I can drive. That means my exploration can increase. And we seem to assume that logistics is an everyday adventure. Just adapt. Can you get a result? Can you can be happy about it? Or do you need to be the center of attention? Oh, you poor thing. You were so wonderful in every way. And how ever did you do that? Well, in some ways, Albert Camus was sort of like, you know, he's starting to hint. He's a pain in the rear end, I think. But when he's hinting that most of the time life is boring, I have to agree with him. We add drama to an otherwise routine life. And it's fanciful. Why that happens, well, I'm not that smart. Masonry takes away a bit of the drama and gives us something I think a lot more interesting. It gives us perspective and that opportunity. So if it's not working for you, then the mirror on the wall is suggesting that maybe this wasn't something that you were cut out to do. Maybe you want to be an Olympic swimmer, but you don't know how to swim. Or maybe you want to be, you know, within that enclave of Freemasons, but perhaps you're not cut out for it. And rightfully so, your mentoring is often at a deficit. You aren't getting the kind of attention to your development, to the questions that you have, the sincere questions. To do that, we need to help both overcome our sense of self-consciousness so we can talk. Now, in lieu of all of that, we're going to jump into the program today. I think I've outdone myself here, but you be the judge of this. The commentary today is stylistically intelligent. Yeah, I was thinking of you. Sit back, enjoy the program, and hopefully have a meeting of the minds. This is start off with a bit of music today. This is Michele Petrucciani, Around Midnight. He's no longer with us, but very, very well. Hear for yourself. you could take that in for quite a while. Beautiful, beautiful stylings. Very talented musician here. The talent, if there isn't a talent that rests within you, it will likely take you convincing yourself to take the risk to actually see what's there instead of safely pretending, making excuses. Try for yourself. Perhaps the poet is closer to you than you would allow. If you've been underperforming in some area, that's not too complicated. What kind of challenges do you present or do you put yourself before that stimulate your thinking? Why would you do it? Because you care about yourself. You need to be able to listen to that inner voice, yeah. The conversation you have with yourself, instead of pretending that it's useless and common sense is for suckers, you might want to come to terms with it at some point. If you interpreted this phrase from Freemasonry, making good men better, as a production, you'd be probably quite disappointed. It's like saying Aristotle's work or Pythagorean philosophy will make me a better person. So I'll fill my library with all kinds of the material. Therefore, I'm presenting myself as an affiliate of those great ideas. As long as you don't ask me what any of it means, or if I understand, or what it's done to change my thinking, as long as you don't have dialogue, we're perfectly fine. But along the way, questions are put to us. What have you done with the opportunity that you've had? Well, I've been waiting patiently. I need some instruction that's going to help me to grow up and be articulate and thoughtful. And everything that I think and know already is quite satisfactory. I don't need the help of Freemasonry. Thank you very much. I'm a lion of society. I'm a genius within my own mind. I need nothing from the order. And it shows, that kind of thinking shows, doesn't it? No, there's nothing to fret about. We'll get into the things that we'll fret about. We'll get into it with the poetry today. But sit back for a second and consider this. Stylistically intelligent. I was thinking, you know, coming up with a way of connecting with you. Some would wonder if men have joined Freemasonry because it is stylish. Yeah, a bit ironic today, huh? When we've risked relevancy for far too long and now it's payback time. There are Masonry dandies mingling with scholars, always eventually finds its own level, intelligent enough to be drawn to the freedoms of intellectually enlightened company. After a period of entry, they go out into the world to develop their own type of merit. It is friendly encouragement. Perhaps it is contemplation of spirituality. Except for times of sleepy impatience of philosophers, they are generally engaging with such private arguments when confronted with opportunity, but stumbling over self-doubt onto the path. A mentor will teach you how to carry yourself in front of others. He will teach you that your talent is inspiring for others as their efforts are to you. private and individual. This type of work redefines who and what you are in this world by teaching you how to live with others and remaining above the negativity by learning alternative explanations. It will support your work toward confirmation such that your comfort level will be apparent to one and all. Such is the nature of confidence behind the expression of grace. It is a manner that men admire and try and emulate. At each stage, your awareness develops quietly until you burst into the audition, having earned the opportunity. Each one of us exudes an atmosphere, and it should be considered that if you can communicate your talents on the level, your manner will diplomatically contribute to harmony. The feeling is so interesting, it becomes self-reinforcing. If this were a matter of following instruction, our entire order would be peripatetic philosophers. Instead, we are continually auditioning, continually learning what talent is and being excited by a desire to be part of the performance of a lifetime. Yeah? Thank you. Much about the atmosphere interfering with everything going on. It is. And I encourage you to get the lightning strikes and things happening. Good time to introduce some work by people who decided not to hold back. They decided that the world could be quite satisfying, that there was so much more going on that they themselves could talk about, even though it wasn't necessarily on the minds of other people around them. And I think this came from a belief that they had to make the best of the situation. They had to learn at a very, very early age that the world wasn't as it was supposed to be, that life was hard. I speak about both these fellows, but I'm talking about a group of friends from the Lake, became known as the Lake District Poets. And the formation of the Romantic period came with, and it said that two fellows, this is one of them, Samuel Coleridge and William Wordsworth, were the poets that originated this kind of thinking. And whether that's the entirety of it, well, probably not. There's always a bit more. But they both came from, they both had difficult backgrounds. It wasn't comfortable. They had to endure abuses and neglect at an early, early age. And to think that they were more hardy in that day, come on, we know better than that. Little boys are little boys. And yet, something quite remarkable, this expression of genius came about. Maybe it's because of it instead of in spite of it. And this the work today is by Samuel Taylor Coleridge. He's born on the 21st of October in 1772. So this would have been, as masonry was gaining traction, this would have been the type of material that our early Masonic brethren would have been reading. And let's presume that, unlike the criteria today in many places, to be a Mason in those days required that you would be literate. And that wasn't that you could read and write, but it had to do with what you read and what you wrote. This fellow is referred to as a lyrical poet and a critic and a philosopher. A reasoned kind of a man that was rational and a critical thinker. It echoes Freemasonry, not necessarily here where we seem to be in a world of excesses. Critical thought is important. If you are unfamiliar with the term, you might think that it means that you're given a reason to criticize the world around. Well, if that happens, you're probably very lonely and very bleak and probably not worth being in the same room. This guy was the child of a vicar. His father was also a a priest, an Anglican priest, and he was the head of a local grammar school. And he learned, he was reading at a very, very early age. And then his dad died when he was young. And he went to Christ's Hospital in London, where he completed his sort of secondary education. And then he went to Jesus College in Cambridge. And he just continued. He was just mad about reading, got his hands on all kinds of material, as you can imagine. And then he left in his third year. He just couldn't afford it. And he went to London and enlisted as a dragoon under the assumed name of Silas Tompkin Cumberbatch. Interesting, yeah? And despite his unfitness for life, he remained until discovered by his friends. He was then brought out by his brothers and restored to Cambridge. And on his return, the intellectual and political turmoil surrounding the French Revolution had set a lot of things into motion, very intense and urgent discussion about the nature of society. And he now conceived the design of circumventing the disastrous violence that had destroyed the idealism of the French Revolution by establishing a small society that should organize itself and educate its children according to better principles than those obtaining in the society around him. And he had chanced to meet this other poet, Robert Southey, and the two of them developed a plan for this society called a Panisocracy, and to set up a community in the Susquehanna River in Pennsylvania. And to this, Coleridge left Cambridge for good and set out with Southey as a public lecturer in Bristol. Anyway, from that utopian kind of mindset, everybody equal, everybody contributing, he was, this was the nature of the fellow. Here we're going to talk about the work of this thinker. The zeitgeist of Romanticism, notoriously broad in its philosophy and had definite universal views upon the concepts of the individual and nature and imagination that constitute the basis of what today is known as the main aspects of the movement. And they are addressed in Coleridge's The Lime Tree Bower My Prism. And that's the poem we're going to tuck into today. And it includes a focus upon the natural world, and it's associated with its ability to transform the individual, as well as its connection to religion, the potential of imagination, and the position of the individual within his sphere of being. So this poem reflects the romantic notion of the power of the imagination. And it's divided in three parts. The poem first shows the poet's happiness and excitement at the arrival of his friends. But as it progresses, we find this unhappiness turns into resentment and helplessness for not accompanying his friend due to an accident. He had an accident in the evening of the same day when they were planning to go for a walk. And this lime tree bower, my prison, is sort of, in a way, sulking a bit, like, gee, you know, I want to be able to go, and it's unfair that I have to sit here and within these lime trees, and you know, it's prison. I should be able to go for a walk with all those people. I should be laughing with them and enjoying the sun. I won't read the whole thing for you, it dances, but well, they are gone, and here I must remain. This lime tree bower, my prison. I have lost beauties and feelings such as would have been most sweet to my remembrance, even when age had dimmed mine eyes to blindness. They, me friends, who I never more may meet again on springy heath, upon the hilltop edge, wander gladness and wind down perchance to that still roaring dell of which I told. The roaring dell, or wooded, narrow, and deep, and only speckled by the midday sun, where its slim trunk, that ash from rock to rock, flings arching like a bridge, that branchless, unsunned and damp, those poor fellow leaves, they're tremble in the gale, and they're yet tremble still fast in the waterfall. There, my friends, behold the dark file of long, lank leaves that all at once, a most fantastic sight, still nod and drip upon the dripping edge of the blue clay stone. So we're part of a conversation. And it's dramatic because the poet's composed when some of his long expected friends in his cottage. And on the arrival, he was so excited, but he actually accidentally met with an accident because he was unable to walk during all their stay. One evening, when he was left behind by his friends who went walking for a few hours, he wrote three lines. And you can tell he's frustrated not accompanying his friends. And they say, I'm missing these experiences that will forever, my entire life will never be restored. Well, they've gone and I must remain here. This is prison. And he's comparing the lime tree to the walls or bars of a prison. Now, it takes a certain imagination to do that, doesn't it? It's almost like as imaginative as a person sitting there not contributing a lick, but expecting to be entertained. I'm bored. Stimulate me. Do something wonderful. Well, curiosity with you. Well, they're gone, and here I must remain. Now my friends emerge beneath the wide, wide heaven and view again the many steepled track, magnificent of hilly fields and meadows and the sea. With some fair bark, perhaps those sails light up the slip of smooth, clear blue betwixt two isles of purple shell. Yeah, they wander on in gladness all, but thou methinks most glad, my gentle-hearted Charles, for thou hast pined and hungered after nature many a year, in the great city, winning thy way, with sad yet patient soul, through evil and pain and strange calamity, solely sink at the western ridge, thy glorious sun. There are swimming and walking, having a gay old time, and here he is hurt. Here he is hurt. A delight comes sudden to my heart, and I am glad as I myself were there, nor is this bower, this little lime tree bower, have I not marked much that has soothed me? Full of the pain which upsets those fronting elms, and now with blackest mass across the mighty orb's dilated glory, well, thou stood gazing, or when all was still, flew creaking over my head. No sound is dissonant, which tells of life. He may have a point. How the tragedy of being hurt. So next, when you're feeling put out and all your friends are out doing those wonderful things, at least in your mind, think back on, you might want to find a copy of this lime tree bower and sink yourself into it a bit. It's a remarkable read. Maybe it is the turmoil that gives us the edge, the challenge to endure, to persevere, to look for the best of what you have and to adjust and adapt to it. Speaking of adapting, Red Garland. if you're prone to thinking that what's happening around lodges, particularly here in North America, is unique, well, this might be a little more fulsome reminder. Particularly when we're looking at the thinking that was occurring, about lodges being a product of decadence or being influenced by decadence. We're talking about the ancients. Now, if you think that this is an ideological conflict, well, I think it's much more enriched when we look at the context that some noteworthy Masonic historians have done. I apologize to historians in general by qualifying it as Masonic as if. But there was a considerable range of racism evident in London at the time. Being Irish was not putting you at the head of the class. There was and it suffered. And when Irishmen that had migrated, doing well and becoming successful, wanted to form their own lodges, they needed cooperation, and they weren't getting it. And so, right, form your own Grand Lodge. And so over on this side of the ocean, where we had made polite petition, as good bureaucrats tend to do, and were not only rebuffed but ignored by very determined fellows. These jobs were given to some very, very interesting people, McGilvery, McNabb, Mercer Wilson, probably one of the finest of the lot. But this was a conflict, and nobody was blinking. And so we have Margaret C. Jacob taking this into account. The taking over the old masonry of the operatives by gentlemen and even nobles produced a reaction from lesser men. The ensuing schism and debate pitted the newly risen men of artisan background against what they believed to be the decadence into which many of the London lodges had fallen. Their most eloquent spokesman was Lawrence Dermot, the Irish immigrant and artisan. He'd done well for himself as a wine merchant in London. Popular tract with the curious title Amen Raison began by reminding the brethren of the many ancient and biblical figures who had risen to fame from the most humble of backgrounds. After citing John Bunyan on the spiritualizing of the Temple of Solomon, giving mention of John Milton, Dermot mocked Anderson's mythical and official history of 1723 with its glorification of the Augustan. He also attacked those that have been preferred to places as office of great trust and dignified with titles of honor without having the least claim to courage, wit, learning, or honesty. Ho! Those notions are coming full circle again, aren't they? Dermot glorifies the builders, as opposed to the architects of Solomon's Temple, a favorite edifice of Masonic lore, and claims for them a secret Kabbalistic wisdom transmitted through the original guild and embodied in the old regulations or charges. Dermot also castigated the irreligious paths of the unhappy libertine and the arrogant professors of atheism and deism. This assault on the fashionable religiosity of the English Enlightenment was not, however, accompanied with a total retreat from its principles. Superstition is denounced and liberty of embracing what faith he shall think proper affirmed. We only pursue the universal religion or the religion of nature. The most telling assault on the moderns occurs in the proclamation that the Freemason should treat his inferiors as he would have his superiors deal with him. Wisely considering that the original of mankind is the same. The Mason is a lover of quiet and is always subject to the civil powers, provided they do not infringe upon the limited bounds of religion and reason. The references to Bunyan and Milton suggest an affiliation with men of non-Anglican origin who may have had a sympathy with the Puritan tradition. The egalitarianism, however, was very finely honed. It was not intended for the miserable wretches of low life or for women to whom Dermot makes constant reference. Equality is the prerogative of men of real worth and personal merit, not of seniority. This lionizing of tradesmen and small merchants is a constant theme in the literature of the ancients. It is accompanied on the one hand with sentiments of deference to the court, to monarchy, and the church, to which a lodge is compared, and on the other, with country disdain for placement and privilege. The sons of Noah, as Masons are described, lay emphasis now on merit and virtue as the criteria for preferment and on sober striving. The lodge is to be a place where the virtues of middling men are practiced and rewarded. This is a revolt of lesser men against their betters, and one which prefigures in tone and language the Wilkite agitation of the 1760s. It is also interesting from its obsessive concern about the relationship of this male fraternity to women, a topic we need to return to later. There you have the show for this week. Thank you for sitting in. It's been interesting and a pleasure. Maybe we are seeing the evolution of the way Freemasonry is being expressed. I think we are. Freemasonry does really quite well. It's us. The way we manufacture governance and justify it and rationalize. If we don't pay attention to our behavior, we're going to have great difficulty learning from our mistakes. Right now, we are contracting where I am. I look at Masonry and other parts of the world where there is a philosophical base. And I keep telling myself that I was stolen at birth and that I really was from those areas. And I was given to a very nice family, but one that just rejected any sense of a philosophical bearing. So I really am of that mindset. Maybe that's my lime tree prison. The evolution, nobody said it was going to be easy. And so we are watching what we've manufactured. We have created this. And we've created this juxtaposition against these philosophically prescient organizations. it's like seeing the success of art in that other town and doing nothing about it except saying, well, art isn't important. We'll just discount it entirely. We'll create our own version. And if it's graffiti, well, that's good art. And the conceits of man. And well, come back next week. We'll talk more about this. And hopefully you'll be encouraged that this kind of dialogue we hear in Masonic Effects was going on Masonic Home Companion way back 10 years ago. This is not going to go away, and it's not about an authority. It's about connecting, and gratefully so, we're making that connection around the world. Thank you. Thank you, for listeners from Ireland and Netherlands and Germany and Denmark and Croatia and Greece. Thank you very much. I very much appreciate Britain. I'm very much encouraged by your support. And to think that there is somebody on that great big island in Australia, that there's people that are tuning in, and Oman. I wish you could shake your hand. And India and North America and Peru and Argentina. It's like an interesting group. And I wish we could all sit in a lodge together and carry on. I look forward to having you join in next week, and we'll try and come up with something interesting and stimulating. And in the meantime, commit those acts of random Masonic kindness. The world needs thinking men, needs men with perspective, men with that are confident and have a sense of the purpose of humanity. You take care of yourself, and thank you very much for joining us.